Podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Nick.
And we're back.
We've done this before.
I know. I blame Riverside.
I do too. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Keeping warm down here. The weather has been very mixed. It's been raining really hard, then really warm, then raining really hard, really warm, but I love it. It's better. I know it's been nice up there for you, but we have enjoyed some great drives in the breaks and weather, so it's good to be here.
Did you get up to your favorite and my favorite place in the world, up to Jerome?
We
in Caduceus?
Did.
Okay.
We did. We went up on Sunday to Jerome with the best weather. Took up the road up the backside. Went. There's a back way into Prescott on the way there that you and I haven't done. That was probably, I don't know if it was better, but we had fewer cars to deal with. So that made it more fun. More passing zones, more high speed sweepers. And Jerome's really tight. The road back road into Jerome is really tight and technical. This gave us like a little more room to stretch the Audi's legs. We are already like, we need more downforce, bigger front splitter, bigger rear wing, more side skirts. Like it's the Audi GT kit, the RE GT kit adds like 220, 240 foot pounds or 200 foot pounds, 240 pounds of additional downforce. And I think we could use it. We definitely pushed it to its limits, it was fun. It was a great drive. And we have had every weekend, we've taken advantage of the area and driven. And it's been great to have that be kind of the source of joy for the trip. Dog, on the other hand, not such a huge fan of the G forces. He's got his own little seat in there, but I have to hold him, just hold him in my lap and kind of hold him, because otherwise he does not understand why he is being thrown around. The dog just doesn't understand G forces. He's a pretty good trooper if I hold him in my arms, but he's definitely gets a little scared trying to sit in his seat and brace himself and not go flying across the car. So
why is mommy laughing hysterically as I'm being thrown across the car? Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Screaming into the turns.
So, yeah.
You know, one thing I wanted to bring up with you, and we've discussed this before. How is the traffic down there? How are the people? Like, better or worse than Seattle? I mean, because I remember. The last time we went up to Jerome, I'm not just talking about Jerome, we made Andrew drive in a four-door rental car, and we made him throw it around the turns, you know, that race car up to the top of Jerome, but with, I think, five people in the car. But notoriously, Arizona sucks for traffic. Like, it's nice there, but it sucks.
It's still not as bad as Seattle as far as traffic. But as far as drivers, I would say it's more of the same at higher speed. So think of just as... like the same level of inattentiveness, but at a faster pace because it's really dry. So everybody does 85 and a 65 here, like kind of like LA actually. And yet they're not paying attention either. They're kind of like putting on their makeup or sipping their coffee or reading a book. It's absolutely hysterical how bad drivers are here. And it's known for it. You are correct. Arizona drivers are just absolutely terrible. Every bit as bad as Washington, just with more speed. So that's a nice combination recipe for disaster. In the back roads, they're just annoying. Like we've talked about this before, but I don't like to be in the way. If I'm in somebody behind me wants to go faster, I'll just get out of the way at the nearest slow vehicles must use turnouts. I just pull over. I don't care. Like, who cares, right? But we're not even really pushing it, and we hold our space like back because we don't want rock chips in the windshield. The stack does a great job of keeping the rest of the car, but we already picked up a good rock chip on this trip, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I'll never understand why people just seem okay with being in the way when there's spots to pull over. Now, if you're in a mountain road, there's no place to pull over. Totally understand. I back off. I'll pass when it's safe, whatever. But I mean, on all these mountain roads we've been on, there are so many places to pull over specifically for this, especially up to Tortilla Flat, one of the best drives out of here. It's just like, but people are just oblivious or they just don't care. And so, I mean, you make your own spot to pass. The Audi's pretty good at that, to say the least. But it is really annoying. I don't get it. I never will. So, whatever.
It's notorious for things down. I mean, I understand in the summer, you want to get the hell out of your house, get to where the next air conditioning stop is, and then, you know, get back into it. But that's tough. You lost a windshield, or you got a chip?
I got a chip. And it's funny because we weren't even on one of the back roads. We were just like out on the highway at 6 a.m. to get ahead of traffic. And one came from the other side of the highway and hit the passenger side windshield of the Audi, like right in my line of sight from the passenger seat. Now, luckily, we should, for the Carter tip, we've talked about this a little bit, but you should have in your toolkit or in your trunk or frunk or glove box or whatever you're driving, you can get these rock chip repair kits that are DIY. Permatex, the guys who make Loctite, they make a really good one. That's the one recommended by Project Farm. It's like $10 on Amazon right now, maybe 12 on the normal price day. And they're really easy to do, especially down here or anywhere where it's warm. We have a lot of UV because UV light is what cures the, what do you call that stuff?
The resin. Yeah.
The resin. Thank you. Yeah. The resin in those. Yeah. And so super quick, super easy to do. You literally just put a little suction cup thing on there, squeeze it in there. Then you scrape it off, the excess off, and you have a seal. So
Do you then need to take that and have it actually repaired professionally, or will that hold for the time being?
That's a permanent repair. Okay. Super hard permanent repair. It's the same thing they do. And don't get me wrong, it's if you have a good rock chip repair place, they can do it better with professional equipment because they can inject it deeper into the windshield. But for a minor chip, and some of the ones you get, you don't really like when you get sandblasted, you might have a little tiny chip that people don't think of as like, because it doesn't look like a fisheye or it doesn't look like a crack. They don't really think about it as a chip, but you can fill those and they virtually disappear completely. Yeah. And those are really, these are really ideal for that. But, if you go through your insurance, though, a lot of insurance companies say you will do rock chips for free. You might be surprised that they are often not. They will reflect on your policy as a ding. I don't mean like a ding, like you pulled your deductible, but an incident, let's put it that way. And they can affect your rates, depending on your insurance company. It's not all of them, but windshield claims definitely do. In fact, one windshield claim a year is enough to consider you like a high risk driver, which is, you know, kind of BS in my opinion. It's completely not out of your control. It's for the most part. I don't think, like I was saying, I don't ride people's asses when they drive because it's just not worth it, the damage to the car. But you know, a gravel truck without a cover on it because they don't want to push the button. I can't tell you how many times that's happened. Or just places around here, everybody drives off road. There's tons of off roading around here in Utah. So you get trucks coming off and on the highway, and they've got all those rocks stuck in their tires, and they go flying out. Like that's not really in your control. They're going to come from everywhere. So it's kind of annoying, but your insurance company will definitely ding you no matter how low your deductible is.
And maybe I'm aging myself. I remember in the corners of mall parking lots, there used to be people that would set up their tents and they would do windshield. And I haven't seen that in forever. I don't know if that's still a thing or
it's still like, that used thing. To be the we easiest don't see way to it do nearly it. As often. Yeah. Most people just go to the glass places now. But a glass in our area in Washington, I've noticed, I actually looked a little bit. The average price of a chip repair is about $50 to $75, 75 on the high side, which is typically on the east side. Anywhere there's money, you're going to pay higher rates. And it's not rocket science. But some do it definitely better than others. I had one quote unquote repaired on the Raptor, and it looked worse than I think when I had the chip. So, and it cost me $75. So needless to say, I learned to do these myself and was pretty happy with that result.
Is that the sticker you had on the windshield forever?
It is. And,
I remember that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so I did it before I left, and it looked better than when I had somebody else do another one on the other side. Because I had multiple rock chips in that windshield that I had fixed. Probably four or five, honestly. So I probably had a windshield's worth.
Hey, whatever works. Whatever works. But yeah, those, and you can get those kits on Amazon and places like that.
Yeah, any auto parts store.
Insurance companies don't give them to people or sell them to people. Like it seems like a great, cheap way to do it.
Some idiot would try and put it on in the dark in their garage and 30 degree weather and say, why didn't it work?
Fair enough. You know. Okay. Yeah. I forgot about the idiot factor. Sorry.
Just read the instructions. It's actually really easy to do though. I was surprised at how easy it is to do yourself. Sure. And like I said, they're the pro glass places. If you get a really bad chip, you're still going to want to go to one of those to prevent it from spreading. They can get better penetration by drilling into the windshield and getting that resin really in between the layers. But for just the basic stuff, the home ones for $12, they're super easy to do. Yeah,
I've never tried one. I think I have one, but I've never had to use it. I say that now, and I will have to use it this week. But
I hope not. You know.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely missing you up here. You know, the sun has been out. It's going to go away, but that's okay. Well, there's still a bunch of stuff going on. I don't know if you have you seen that they really updated the Avance calendar lately with a bunch of.
Yes, I've been missing a few of the cool things. One of the ones, I mean. There's the one I'm really going to miss is the Weird and Wacky show. That's at Pacific Raceways on April 6th.
Yeah.
Pacific Raceways Innovation Center. And that I love those because I like unique cars. I see exotics all the time. And if you want to see exotics at Redman Town Center is about to kick off and be rained out as usual. But still the best exotic show in our area or any car show, period, in our area, period. So you want to see that. Yeah. You're going to see that every week at Exotics all summer, and it's going to be great. But I love this stuff, which would still probably qualify for Exotics because it's really out there.
Everything there would be. I mean, because that's the point. It's rare. You're not going to see it. But this is just a collection of really weird, really rare, cool things. So
yeah, that one.
And then I think there's an autocross like celebrating Women's Month on the 30th, correctly? Correct? I think. And this will be out in time. Yeah, we'll be good. So I think there's just a few spots left. If you haven't done that, that's going to be really neat. I think the Women's Day at the off-road event, I saw pictures. I wasn't able to go. Looked amazing. Usually Dan and I try to go out there and, you know, try to help and kind of blend into the background, obviously. But, you know, unfortunately, we were both out of town, but it looked absolutely amazing. So. Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that. That's my favorite off-road day. We've said that many times because they seem to have the most fun.
Yeah.
So that makes it more fun for us.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, people just check out the Avance calendar. No matter what area you're in, California, Seattle, you know, there's always tons and tons of events on the Avance calendar. So if you're not getting your money's worth out of your membership, if you're not checking that out all the time, just my opinion.
And this is going to kind of lead into a topic where I have not asked you any questions about your new truck because that's what we're going to talk about that. But one of the partnerships that is back is the Michelin program for 15% back, I think.
Yep.
If you buy a set of Michelins.
On the S3, last time we got almost $175 back on, we got Pilot AS All Sports on the S3 and 15% back plus, and that's anywhere. It's not like you don't have to go to Discount Tire, Costco, whatever. You go wherever the tires are cheapest, and then you get an additional 15% back. So it's a killer deal.
Yeah, and it's really easy. You just have to send in your receipt and prove you're an Avance member, and then you get is it a check or is it a gift card you get back?
Gift card you get back.
Gift card. Yep. Okay, that's what I thought.
I've actually got one. I'm not going to hold it up in front of the screen, but I have one in front of me.
Yeah, hold up that number, Dan. 374.
Slowly.
Slowly.
It works just like a debit card. It works real. Great. And BF Goodrich too. So that's Michelin and BF Goodrich and. Yeah, I unfortunately replaced the tires on the Raptor a little too quick, and then like 3 months later, the BF Goodrich still came out. But I am going to replace the tires on the new truck when I can with the new KO3s. So the new truck, GMC 2500 HD AT4X AEV edition, which comes with BF Goodrich HD terrains, which is a really good tire, actually, especially for a heavy-duty truck. But they do lack a 3-peak rating, so I'm going to sacrifice a little tread life for grip. And I'm going to switch them out to the KO3s as soon as I can.
Are you having to hydrate more when you have to say that name every time you talk about your truck? I mean,
yeah,
it has to be one of the longest names ever.
I just say it's an HD AT4X, but I mean, it's a long name.
Well, I want to back up here a little bit. And we've talked about a little bit on the show that Dan had been preparing to get. He had his Raptor. Your Raptor was a 2020.
And they were the second gen.
They were making their pilgrimage down to Arizona, and he was going to start looking around for his next truck. And we all assumed, because it's Raptor Dan, he was going to go home with a Raptor. And he decided to throw the dynamite stick into it, and then all of a sudden bought this GMC 2500 HD AT4X AEV. It's written down. That's the only reason I remembered it. Talk about this process, because, I mean, the Raptor was kind of you. I mean, not that I'm so glad to see you kind of find something, but talk about some of the pros and cons of why you did this.
Yeah. So if anybody knows me, I like the right tool for the job. Doesn't matter what it is. It's I like having the right tool for the job in the shop, at the house, whatever it is. Having the right tool for the job makes all the difference in getting the end goal accomplished in the correct way. And the Raptor easily wins as the best vehicle I've ever had, let alone truck. It's all around. It never let me down. It ran perfectly for 70,000 miles with regular oil changes and regular maintenance. The only thing I did, I changed the brake pads and the rotors, and which that truck is slightly underbraked. And you know, I added the winch to it, which I did take off before I traded it in, and the lights. I took those off. But other than that, it's. It got oddly decent mileage for what it was. For a truck that comes factory with 35-inch tires, it got, on average, 16 to 17 highway. It had an amazing transmission, the best suspension under any vehicle I've ever had in my life. It was the most comfortable truck to drive every day. In spite of its width, it was an excellent daily driver. I will say it, it lives up to the hype in every way. I had no disappointments with that truck. I really didn't. I think it to this day is probably the best truck ever made. Seriously.
Okay, so that that. So as I'm going to kind of interview you on this, and okay. I'm going to push you. Why then? Why would you all of a sudden buy a big HD 2500? I mean, I know there's a trailer involved now. You're towing the Audi. Is that the main reason for the Switch?
And so we quickly found on this trip that the trailer and everything's been kind of an experiment. I've never had the opportunity to not have to drive a car wherever I wanted to go. So like if I was going to go to a road trip to Jerome, and I have many times, I did it in my C6, my C7, my GTR, my 911 Turbo. Everything has been there and it's been great, but there are so many countless highway miles of boredom where you feel like you're just kind of wasting the vehicle. And I found every back way to get places, but there's still probably 1,000 miles on this trip that are just coasting along. Mm-hmm. And with this, I get to just unload the R8 with the fun roads, hop in, go for the drive, enjoy it. We get to unpack here where we're staying and have the truck to run around town with and the truck to go have fun with. Or it means the R8 to go have fun with. And so we quickly realized on the way down as we did this in multiple places how much we love that. Like that is a game changer for us on what we like to do. When with the dog, we're not flying as much. So how do we make the most of the R8? And this is towing it. We put it in the trailer. It's super easy to unload. I mean, it literally takes us 5 minutes to unload it and about 10 minutes to load it, strap it down, and get back on the road. It's really easy. And it's not with the whole trailer side out. You literally just drive it in, open the door, and get out. There's no like shimmying around the car. It's super easy. But the Raptor is not the right tool for that job. It can do it. We're not over the weight limit by any means. I think the trailer with the car and all the gear, including tools, is like 6,500 pounds. And the Raptor tows just over 8,000. Now, that said, it does not tow well 6,500 pounds. It gets 7 miles to the gallon on average. Literally, I got 7 on the way down. And it has the power, but it doesn't really have the chassis or the suspension for it. So when the Raptor is so sprung, so soft, this is why it's so great off-road and driving all around, that when you hit the brakes on the trailer, you move around, the Raptor really springs with it. Now, I could change the leaf springs out, and I could do some extensive suspension mods, and it would probably do it just fine. But then I'm kind of taking away some of the other characteristics, in my opinion, and it's really not a vehicle designed to tow. That's not what a Raptor is for. That's what, and like I said, it's fantastic off-road because of these characteristics that make it so great at not towing, or make it so bad at towing.
I think you put it, the Raptor has the cool factor, that it has that, you know, blast through the desert, blast through the back roads. But you don't see a lot of Raptors towing things that aren't small little trailers.
No, if you had a small trailer and you're just towing motorcycles or even a couple snowmobiles or something, and sub 5,000 pounds and an aerodynamic trailer, you'd probably be totally content with the Raptor. If I was just towing a car and no tools or anything else in the trailer, then it would be fine. It really would. It'd be a great truck for that, and you wouldn't be disappointed. It's just like when I pull the trailer with the GMC now, it's like the trailer is not even there. The thing will tow 18,500 pounds. So the trailer is like an afterthought. It's like, what trailer? There's no trailer back there. That doesn't make any difference at all. And that's great. I like that. I like just being a hook to the trailer, go, and it's like, it's got, you know, automatic power mirrors. It's got, you know, that fold out farther. Like every good 3/4 ton and up truck does, it tows great. And an F-150 non-Raptor would probably still be a really good choice for towing. And I actually thought about going that way because it'll tow 4,000 more pounds than the Raptor.
Just a regular F-150?
Yeah. Yeah, because okay. You don't have the suspension. Ah. So I kind of made a list here of like the pros and cons. And the cons are quite a bit with this truck if you compare them to the Raptor. It's just that I'm going to give you the list and then I'll tell you why I still went with this. So I looked at an F-250 Tremor as well. And I looked at the Dodge. I didn't like the Dodge at all. The interior is fine, but it just feels dated and the transmission's old. And I wasn't impressed with the Dodge. It's not my taste. It has a nicer interior, I think, but I didn't like the way it drove at all. And same with the F-250 Tremor with the solid front axle on both of those heavier duty trucks, admittedly, but they don't have the same road manners as the GMC/Chevy with the IFS in the front, not even close. And so that's what led me to the GMC. But Raptor wins. I put this down. Suspension by far. There's no contest. I think out of the box, I don't think there's a truck. You could maybe argue a TRX, but in the not 130, if you can get one for a TRX. Yeah. So in that price range, I don't think there's anything that touches a Raptor in truck wise, period. And then interior ergonomics, the Raptor's way better. The seats are 10 out of 10 in that because they're designed to take you off-road quickly. They're super soft and comfortable, and they're wide. The Raptor has actually a lot more better interior ergonomics across the board. Like, it's just a more comfortable truck to
be
in.
The rear of the Raptor, like the rear seats, the rear is amazing. I mean, when we took it down to Moab, it was, or not Moab, McCall, it was absolutely so comfortable for anybody back there.
Yeah, and it's bigger than the 2500 quite a bit, even the trimmer.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, even the F-250. It's really odd how much more usable interior space there is in an F-150.
Is it wider and a little bit longer? I'm talking about the cab of the Raptor, yes. Versus. Okay.
It's wider, it's longer, and it's there's less what's the word? The center console section, even though this has a column shifter being a 2500, it's the center console is much, it's actually bigger on the Raptor, but it's also like the transmission doesn't take up as much room in there, so the seats are wider. So the Raptor is deeper and longer, whereas this is wider across the board on the 2500 and the Tremor, the F-250.
Interesting.
Objectively, I think the styling is 100% better on the Raptor. The Raptor is just a better looking truck, especially the new ones, than pretty much anything out there. I think it's preference.
You can change that though. Yeah. I mean, you will make the GMC your own, like you did with the Raptor. So.
And then, of course, I mean, there's the little things like the sunroof. The one in the GMC feels like it's from 1995. It's small. It has a manual cover. The Raptor one's the F-250 is like the entire cab, massive moonroof. It gets way better mileage than any of the 2500s. The Raptor oddly gets 16, 70 miles to the gallon consistently, 14 and a half around town. But if you're commuting around, you'll get 16 to 17 as long as your foot's not in it all the time. It's a really...
Do you think that will be a trade-off with the fact that this new one being a diesel, you'll get a little bit more?
No.
You don't think you won't get better mileage? So the Raptor will get better mileage. Interesting.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a common misconception now that with the additions of all the EGR stuff they put into diesel, they get way worse mileage. In fact, de-smogging your diesel will... So you will burn less... You'll burn more efficiently, but you'll produce more exhaust gases, but you'll get way better mileage. So if you non-EGR illegally your vehicle, you'll probably get 5 miles a gallon. It's very illegal, but the new trucks don't let you do that.
Like they don't like to let you. I mean, because you're talking about putting in the fuel and you're talking about putting in that def crap. I mean, remember we've talked about it. Like who was it that ran out of def and their truck went into limp mode and would only go 5 miles an hour kind of thing.
Yep, that's about the same. All of them will now. Yeah. So if you can eliminate all that, and like I said, it does create a lot more exhaust gas. I don't mean like rolling coal, but even the basic tune will put out a lot more smog. So it's a trade off, obviously, but at the same time, like I said, you get like 5, 6, 4 miles to the gallon. So
which we say, you know, we wink. Do not condone that because it is illegal and
And then of course, like, let's see, just daily drivability of the Raptor. It's a smaller truck, it's way easier to get around. It's actually wider than the GMC and all 2100s. It's the Raptor is a wider truck. People don't think about that, but it is wider than all the other vehicles until you get into a dually. It's wider than all of them, but it's pretty agile, so it's pretty easy to drive around all day.
How much longer is the GMC than the Raptor?
Oh man, like 4 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet.
4 feet longer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the bed alone 7 feet. And the Raptor is only a 5.5. The bed on this is 7 feet long. Oh, okay. And then you add like the front end. I mean, it's massively bigger. Then the Raptor comes with better wheels and tires. You get optional bead locks from the factory. None of the 2500s do. I guess the biggest thing, though, is the off-road stuff. And the Raptor lives up to the hype off-road. Limited slip front differential, locking rear differential, all-wheel drive mode with a limited slip center diff. I mean, the Raptor really, really puts down the traction, the power, and everything you would ever want off-road. Until you get into super modified trucks, and you're just not going to find anything better, period. It's been proven a million times over. It just works.
So, I mean, and I kind of know the answer to this, but I mean, I guess I don't. You're going to be missing out on this. Are you going to need to find another vehicle now to do the off-roading stuff and things like that? Like monkeys motorcycles we have, but I mean, wink, wink.
Well, I've got the CRF 450, thank God. Yeah. And I've got the monkey, which does actually go off-road. People don't think it does, but you and I have definitely made BMW guys and KTM guys look at us going, how in the world? And you're faster than us. That's not fair.
Yep. And we can go a lot of places they can't because we can get between the rocks. So, yeah.
Exactly.
And yeah. But, and I mean, so, yeah, you, you're known for going off-road with all of us and leading us off-road. So,
well, I did get the AEV package, and I am going to throw AEV under the bus here, too. It is a, you've got, so I've got 35-inch tires. I didn't downgrade. I've got a, I've got actually, I don't have technically more ground clearance. It's about the same, though, but I have a better approach angle of all things. And it's fully armored, AEV front and rear bumpers, steel bumpers, it's winch ready bumpers. So, it's,
yeah, but I go back to when we did the, we went from, Ellensburg over and we were in those trees. And I mean, I was barely getting through the trees and you had the mirrors folded in. Like, you're a lot longer now. You're going to be, I'm not saying this truck is full. The GMC is fully capable of going off road. I'm just saying some of the stupid shit we've done.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to do that. And I'm not planning on it. I will be able to take the bikes wherever I need to go. And I can still do probably any of the backcountry discovery routes that are open to a vehicle. This will do fine. I'm not worried about that, but I think my long-term goal, and it might not be that long, is probably to get a two-door Bronco, get that out there, 37s on that, and call it a day. I'm kind of waiting for the Gen 2 on that to drop. So It's funny, this thing actually ended up being slightly cheaper than the Raptor in the end out the door. I didn't pay any ADM on it, of course, and I wouldn't have had the Raptor either, but fully optioned, this truck is only a few thousand cheaper, which is nice. But of course, yeah, let's talk about the wins here. Definitely towing capacity. Obviously, this thing has got, oh man, almost 1,000 foot-pounds of torque and the same horsepower. It's got more horsepower and torque than the Raptor, but it'll pull up to 18,000 pounds or a little over that. And that's with, so this has got the same, I forget what it is. It's the gold shocks that that Chevy put out, the ones that are on the Colorado and all that.
I forgot what the name of them are.
Yeah. Spiral spool valve or something. They do ride pretty well, not as well as the Raptor, but I didn't expect that either. But for a 3/4 ton truck, this is what got me to the GMC, as I don't want to modify this and put full blown aftermarket suspension on it. And then when I was driving the Ford, I actually messaged Andy from he did my Raptor, Vogue Auto Salon, and I asked him, you know, what would he do? And he just did an F350 with Carly suspension and the whole nine. I was like, do I really want to put another 10 grand in suspension in this thing just to make it? I was like, because I don't actually want it any bigger. So
you were going to put it into the GMC or the Ford to ride the way I wanted to.
Like I said, heavier duty truck, the Ford really is, but it was way overkill from what I needed, and I didn't like the way it drove on the road. That's the big thing here. It has way better electronic aids. The new Fords have really nice cameras as well, but this is pretty trick stuff. The cameras on here are fantastic. They're all HD. I can see everything around this truck from every angle. It's great for that. The brakes are actually really good, oddly good for a 3/4 ton, or even it way outbrakes my Raptor.
Isn't that the first thing you want so you can stop that monstrosity?
Yeah, but big trucks are usually terrible on braking. And so I was surprised that they worked as well as they did. And they don't work great. It's still a massive, 8,000 plus pound truck, but it does brake pretty well. Big brakes all around. The bumpers are nice, a nice touch where at least they're winch ready. And that integrates the winch. Now, I'm going to throw AEV way into the bus here. And I hope they listen to this because I'm going to tell them this on their page too. AEV really blew it with their approach on this. It's 100% marketing. Yes, it'll hold a winch. Their own specific for this model GM supplied super winch, 12,500 pound winch. Guys have been modifying it to hold a Warren winch. And I have no problem with super winch. They make a great winch. They really do. But it was like, there's no cutouts on the front bumper for extra lights. The lights in the inner are garbage because they're all DOT crap, which who cares about DOT headlights at high beams? I'm like, who puts? Okay, yeah, I've seen every Jeep and Toyota guy with, Baja Designs S6s out there at full blown during the daytime because they got to compensate for something. But most of the time, I just want them when my brights are on at night. So I just want brackets for them. So, of course, I have to fab those up because nobody makes one for it. The lights they do have are for the rear bumper, which when you have a truck with an electronic rearview mirror with night vision, it's the last thing you need on the back of your truck. So unless I need chase lights up high, this is just a stupid move on their part.
You're saying you're the first person to buy this that's actually going to use it for probably the AEV version, something
probably
like that.
And for a company that makes good stuff, like AEV makes nice off-road stuff, this thing is like the total poser AEV crap, and they should be ashamed of it.
And so, you sent me the instructions or the installation manual for putting the winch in, and you're taking most of the truck apart just to put the front bumper back. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's easier to put the winch on the Raptor, which requires cutting out the front intercooler, than it is to put the factory winch on a bumper that's made for it in this truck. So like I said, I'm throwing AEV under the bus here because I think they did a terrible job. It's gives it a nice approach and departure angle. It looks really nice. I like the way the truck drives, but this is, it's purely like bro truck aesthetic. And I admit it.
Okay. So I've been on the website and I want to know if it's got some of the cool things that I never thought you wanted or think. Is there a stereo in the tailgate?
Yes, it has a kicker stereo in the tailgate, which is terrible to connect to, and I'll probably never use. It's kind of neat. If you want to hang out by your truck in the woods, sure, I can see that. Sure. Like younger me hanging around a bonfire at night, perfect.
What other fun little things like that that you didn't think you needed but you have now that came with it? Is there?
I like the power steps. It's got really heavy duty power steps on it, and a truck this large, I would not be able to get into this truck. I'm 6'1", and I am tall, and getting into this truck without those power steps would be like. Yeah, I would need to practice my pull-ups. It's tall.
Nice.
Way taller than the Raptor. And so that's kind of funny. It has massaging seats.
Okay, there we go. So that's air-conditioned, nice. Cooled seats, too?
Yep, heated cooled seats, heated steering wheel. I had all this in the Raptor as well, and it worked really well. When you're doing really, really long drives, this stuff's pretty nice. That said, the seats aren't as comfortable as the Raptor because they're not as soft, but it will be nice to have massaging seats.
You have something on this list that kind of made the gears run. When you had the Raptor, you had a movable tonneau cover, which made it really hard to get things in the bed because it took up so much room.
Yep.
Now you got a 7-foot bed, and obviously we've talked about the fact that tonneau covers can really help on mileage, which is something you're going to need. Is that something you're going to be doing with? I mean, I want to kind of work our way into what are you going to be doing with this?
Yeah, I actually did. Yeah. I got a cheaper tonneau cover just for this trip. I'm not going to do a Retrax cover again. I like them; they're really secure and they work well, but they take up too much bed space. I ended up selling the one out of the Raptor. Like I said, it worked great. I'm just not willing to give up the bed space, even on a long bed truck. So I ended up getting just a vinyl roll top cover with some aluminum bracing. It's a Gator cover. I thought it would be better. I had a cheap one from Amazon. I don't even know what brand it was. It was a highly rated one from Amazon, but it was definitely a knockoff no name brand. And I actually liked that one better that I had on the Raptor. And I think it was like $150, and this one was $220 or something. But made in USA.
Okay.
Tons of reviews, thought it'd be better. I'll probably get rid of it. Nothing wrong with it. I just don't like the way it braces on the back, but it does. It actually picked up 2 miles to the gallon running it already. So that was surprising, but it 100% true. People talked about it on the forum. They're like, first thing you should do is get a tonneau cover because it adds mileage. And I was like, really? Can't be that much. No, it's very noticeable.
And the thing about it is, you know, Dan and I we've been friends for a long time. We have great communication. I didn't even know he was looking at the GMCs. We had talked about the Tremor. We talked about the new Raptor and we talked about the F-250 and things like that. But so it's kind of, this was a neat surprise to see kind of through your research, what you came up with. Okay. So what are you going to do to make it Dan's GMC 2500 HD ATX4X?
First thing I'm going to do is the stuff you can't see. The S-Tech is the first thing that's got to go on that truck. I've got it in that. It's a light metallic, but it's technically looks like that kind of primer gray that everybody has. I wanted something different than white.
It looks a little blue in the shade. Like it's
yes,
not.
Yes, it does.
But I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a really, really, really light blue metallic in it that I think is – I love the color. I think it's a good-looking truck for an HD. The S-Tech is going to be the first thing, though, is PPF and tint. The truck did not come tinted, which I'm glad because the dealers overcharge on that stuff left and right here. And I'd rather have the S-Tech on it. I don't want their crappy tint. And so I'm putting that on it first thing when I get back. A phone mount. Speaking of an ergonomic fail on this truck, so in the Chevy version of this, I think the GMC is better looking from the outside, but the Chevy version has a different screen on the interior. Mine has the Denali interior, and the screen sits a little lower on the dash, and it doesn't have a dash pocket on top. And one of the downfalls of that is when you have the screen higher up, it doesn't get, like, you can see it easier with the shifter, because the shifter's on the column now, remember. If it wasn't on the column, it wouldn't be a big deal. But this one, you have the column all the way down, it blocks the left lower corner of the screen. Not that you really need it because you can see the rest of the screen for directions and all that, but there's not really a good place to mount your phone. So I ordered a phone mount up on the dash to get that out of the way. And then I'm doing lights. So I'll have to fabricate my own mounts, or I'll probably talk to the guys at HKP who are doing the light bar on the Audi. I'll probably have them do that at the same time to get some Baja Designs lights on this thing and get rid of the crappy factory LEDs and just off to make something, but I'll probably put a light bar on the front of it.
Are you gonna do it on the front? You're not talking about doing anything on the roof, right? Like a roof rack and bars and lights and things like that?
I might, but I'm gonna see how it goes with just in the front, because like I said, I won't be using this truck as off-road as much. I still will, don't get me wrong, but not like the Raptor. And so
This will be a more get you to the trail than take you up the trail kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And luckily, I mean, I have you and Benji and lots of people I can go out with. Yeah. Brian, I can go out with and hop in if I really want to do some hardcore off-roading. But I can still go explore with this, and I will.
Yeah, if we want to do something stupid, we'll make Brian do it. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so
nice.
I'm going to do that. And then speaking of that I think we talked about this, the BFG deal. Yeah, I'm going to swap out the KO3s. So that's going to be a different look. I won't go any bigger. I'm not just because I actually do care about the mileage on this truck. I went as big as I could go on an HD without going to the point where I'm going to hurt my mileage, because towing is still the number one thing I got this for. And I would tell anybody, if they need a more heavy duty truck for hauling heavy equipment, they're doing a ton of like real work truck stuff, hauling heavy loads, get the Ford. I don't think it's as good looking of a truck, but I think it's a better truck for most people in the sense that it has more interior options. And yeah, it's not going to ride as nice, but it's going to be better at pulling those heavy loads that you'll want a solid front axle for. If you, for some reason, you really feel like you want to off-road a diesel, maybe you're a big mudder in the South or that's your thing. There's a lot of people that do. They make a Prospector from AEV, which I think is a great off-the-ram chassis. This is probably not the truck for that. It will do it, but it doesn't have a limited slip front diff. It doesn't have a locking front diff like the 1500 does. I am going to cure that as soon as one's available. There's talk, I think the one from the 1500 might cross over. The limited slip in front doesn't make a huge difference for a lot of people, but when you drive in a lot of wet and snow, it does. And the Raptor had traction for days because of it. This does have an all-wheel drive mode, just like the Raptor does. Not the same as a chain-driven transfer case. This is a true all-wheel drive mode, and that is great for slippery conditions. But without the limited slip front diff, I'm a little less confident. We'll see if the extra 2,000 pounds over the Raptor might help.
I was going to say, the weight will help more than anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But
interesting.
I just want to give people an honest review. I think people talk about they get a new vehicle. I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. And no, this has a huge amount of drawbacks over the Raptor. But if I'm going to an HD truck, I'm still happy I got it. And I'm glad it's the right tow vehicle for the job.
Sure.
So
interesting. Well, I mean, I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see it when you get it back up here next month. And, you know, I know that it's probably, you know, you're going to have to get a second job because for how big of it is to put S-Tech on it, and we'll call it a day. Yeah.
Yeah, I probably won't do the whole thing like I did the R8. It'll probably be the front and some of the lower sides and stuff like that, but that's about it. I am trying to find some mud flaps. The ones that they said would fit didn't work. I only want them for the trailer because I want to put them on the back at least and on the sides just because it's so tall. I want to keep those rock chips down, but we'll see.
We can find so Yosemite Sam that say back off. Like, I mean, the classic.
I might have to for a while. I was trying to find. I had Husky ones on the Raptor, and those things took a beating for dirt cheap mud flaps. Those things got. I mean, I ran those things over logs. They went through snow. They packed with mud, and they still just like pressure washed off, flexed away, and they were fine. I was shocked at how good those cheap mud flaps worked. But the ones they have that said they fit this don't because of the different wheel trim on the AT4X.
The AEV. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. I'll find some. Or I'll make
interesting.
Some. Yeah.
Well, thank you for the review. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, current affairs in the automotive world with you, because I know you and I both kind of look at it. And the first thing I want to talk about is, you know, what a YouTuber can do to a car company with Fisker. If you don't know, is it Fisker? Did they give him a car, or
no.
He went and bought a car, or what happened?
He went and got one from a local Mitsubishi dealer that was also a Fisker dealer. He got one right off the lot, which I think is the right way to review a car, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I commend him for that, in the sense that he didn't, like, some, you know, you have press cars, and that's fine, but I don't want a review on a press car. I want a review on a car that somebody gets right off the showroom floor. There's some cars you just can't do that with, you know, GT3 RS, well, McLaren.
They loaned it to him, or did he buy it? I can't. That's the part that confused me. They loaned it to him.
Yeah.
Which they probably won't be a Fisker dealer anymore after this, because he absolutely,
he said,
destroyed it.
Yeah, he said it was the worst car he ever reviewed. And a lot of it was because the car had so many bugs. And for, you know, of course, for an EV, bugs are a big, big deal. Like random alarms going off, random lights going off. I think the Ocean is what he's reviewing. And I think it's a decent looking EV for what it's not.
It's
it looks kind of like a...
Yeah.
It looks kind of like a Range Rover, like a,
well,
something like that.
I read one of the articles, and Fisker had, after this, had said, "Well, we sent out a fix for the bugs, but then the fix doesn't actually fix a lot of the bugs that they said it fixed."
Yeah, they went from like an alpha build to a beta build, and they still don't have a production build for their software. So, yeah. I mean,
it's okay. So if you're older in the car community, you remember the Fisker Karma. And by the way, the Fisker Karma is not the same company as the new Fisker. So there's not, you remember when we ran into those guys down in Monterey that time?
Yeah.
And it was like Fisker had been bought out, but they are making. I've seen a couple around here, and I've talked to one person about it. This was before this came out, and they were decently happy with it. Like it was working for their electric car needs. But and I don't know. I was asking you this before. I wonder if Fisker is going to be going after him because I mean he was honest. You didn't like his review that much.
I just didn't think it was as bad as he said it was. In the sense that, like, yes, the software has a lot of bugs, but is it the worst car you can get on the market? Probably not. I guess I understood where he was coming from. It may be the worst car he's reviewed, but MKBHD, who I like his gadget reviews of, although sometimes incorrect, I still think he's a good presenter, and I've followed his channel since it was small, actually. I just didn't think it was... I think he put it on a little thick of how bad the car was, and I don't think it's, like, some monstrous atrocity that can't be fixed. I'm glad Fisker, I'm glad he called out that like this car feels beta. Like it's not ready for production. It's not ready to be released to the public. And yet it's out there testing and prod now. But the same thing could be said for Tesla in the early days too. So, I mean,
they're not testing, they are selling these. People are buying these. Like,
yes, that's what I mean. It's okay. I think they were released to the market too quickly. They treated a car like software, in my opinion, where you put out something quickly to get it out there, and then you run periodic updates. Hence why your phone has 20 or 30 app updates every day, even if you just have a few updates. So think about that. Yeah. That's how the market works. Problem is they're not fixing it on a phone software solution schedule. They're not releasing over the air updates every night. They have like this one fix that comes out every 3 months. Well, I'd be pretty pissed if I bought a brand new car and it was randomly beeping at me for no reason. And there's no software update for 3 months. So yeah. I'm glad he kind of threw him under the bus as it was, but at the same time, I think it might have been a little too clickbaity of a title. Let's put it that way. All of his review was honest, though.
Yeah. On another front, and I didn't even know this, you put this, Rivian owners can now use Tesla superchargers?
Yep. So that is, we talked about this a while back, how everybody's adopting the Tesla supercharger standard, and this is what's going to keep Elon Musk rich, is he has the best supercharger and charging network in the U.S. Tesla really does, the first of the market, and I think this is where the money is for Tesla in the long run. And so now Rivian, who we've always liked Rivian, had a few, like when their cars first came out, they had a few issues, and they were super quick to get to them as quickly as they possibly could. I love Rivians. I think the new R2 coming out looks great.
Have you seen the one after the R2, the other little smaller one? I don't know if it's the R3. I mean, awesome looking cars.
Yes.
And awesome, I think, everything about them, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that's, and now they're going to be able to use Tesla's full supercharger network, which is great. So that opens up 15,000 more superchargers for Tesla, or for Rivian owners. And if you, you know, in our area, if you have, it would be, if you're just tired of seeing all the Teslas because they're like asses in the Seattle area and the LA area, like you get a Rivian. They live up to the hype. We've had plenty come out to the off-road days and kick ass. Like Rivians are awesome.
Yeah.
And we've recorded an episode in one, but they're just really well appointed. And even though they have some bugs, they've been pretty quick to fix them. And now they're more usable than ever. So if you're in the EV market, there's a lot of reasons to buy a Rivian. So I'm glad to see Tesla getting some good competition, and I'm glad to see Rivian thriving even more. This is a big deal for them. So.
All right. Well, now that you're a GMC Chevy guy again, let's talk about how Chevy's been lying to us about the new E-Ray.
Those bastards. We love them.
Those bastards. They advertise what, 592 horsepower at the wheels, and it's really 630.
500. It's even better, worse than that. They advertise 592 foot-pounds of torque in the car. And it's 630 foot-pounds of torque at the wheels. So it should be like a 15% reduction, which would be like 70 foot-pounds of torque down. So you would expect 520. No, I mean, you'd expect about 520 foot-pounds of torque on the dyno. And these things are putting down 630. So that's hauling ass. So that's pretty cool. I was surprised to see that, but it's been pretty good news across the board. The E-Ray's got a lot of hype around it. I think it's probably the best Corvette to buy for most people if you're in that market and you can afford it. I think I looked at one actually here, not to buy, just to look at. They had one at the dealer, and it's gorgeous. It looks as good as you think as the Z06 does, and it's a hybrid. So
what'd they want for it?
$30,000 over MSRP, and it was sold.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
I mean, I'm not paying that, but at the same time, I mean, that's hope for the future. I'm all hybrid. I love hybrids, so that's pretty badass. Got to give GM some credit there. And I loved my Corvette, so I'll be waiting for the Z06s to come down. I still think I kind of want a Z06 over an E-Ray just because of the all-engine aspect, but I haven't driven one yet. And if it drives as well as the NSX does, I might be a quick convert to going to hybrid. So,
Let's talk about the next thing about another good reason to stay off sidewalks, because you can now get your Mustang Dark Horse 5.0 with an extra 300 plus horsepower in addition for $10,000, something like that, and you get a warranty.
If you've got a Coyote engine, you can get the new supercharger from Ford for $10,000 and still be under full warranty, which means your Dark Horse would put out 810 horsepower, and if you got a GT, you have 800. It has 10 horsepower down. And all you need, it only depends on the exhaust. So it's still applicable to anything with a 5.0 Coyote engine, including that F-150 you can get with a 5.0. So if you get a 5.0 Coyote engine, you get 300 horsepower extra. And I was telling Shauna about this. We were talking about engines, and a friend of hers is looking at a new M3 M4. And I said, you know, I never thought I would say this, but you should go drive the new Mustang. One, it's the 10 speed in it is actually really good if you don't want to have a stick, but the stick is it's an auto rev matching downshifting stick shift, so it's really easy to drive. And if you want to go nuts, you can get this and you'll still be $30,000 cheaper than an M3 M4. And the Dark Horse, optioned properly, is the fastest stopping car, period, bar none, over the McLaren 765, over the Z06, over everything. The Dark Horse stops faster than anything, and Ford has quickly gone.
Will that save lives on sidewalks?
Like maybe. People will throw it off a curb, but that's pretty cool. And if you want a track attack monster or a driving a rear-wheel drive car with that much horsepower through the corners can be, you need some skills there. You should definitely go do some track days and learn your car. But as our friends like James Dunas has proven many, many times, you can haul ass on the track in a Mustang, and you can haul ass in the corners in a Mustang too. It's not the old solid axle 80s and 90s Mustangs where they were, you know, pretty much straight shot ponies. These things will handle, especially the new Dark Horse. So between magnetic ride and independent suspension and all the driver's aids, Mustangs haul ass, and they're really nice inside now too. I looked at one, I was like, holy crap, the interior's gorgeous on this, which is really for Ford.
Good job.
They have nice interiors. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, but it's that you and I also think of the Mustangs of the 90s with that curved dashboard and
the whole door just rattled when you closed it and flexed and it felt like it was going to the same. The Camaros
from the
were
factory,
even worse.
Just so we're clear. from the factory. So.
Yeah, but it's time to give a second look to Mustang, I think, because holy shit, did they make a nice car. And it for the money. Oh my God. A fully optioned Dark Horse is if you pick everything under the sun, is about $70,000 to $80,000. Still a lot of money, but when Z06s are 160, 170, and M3s and M4s are 120, 130, and that's just what the cost of things are
still
now.
Still ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, but I mean, if you want cheap speed, there's a reason everybody is in love with the new Dark Horse. Every magazine is car of the year, and I think that Coyote engine, from what they're throwing at it and how it's holding up, it might be the new LS. In the sense that it's the go-to for everything. It just puts down the power, the torque, the reliability. It might be Coyote Swap the World.
Putnam. Yeah.
I know.
Coyote Swap the World. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Well, there's one more story that I'm going to let you talk about as we wrap this up, because I think this is absolutely, this is a and find out kind of situation.
It's bad all around. It's not surprising, though. So what happened, and this is from Washington, down in Lakewood, catalytic converter thief. Basically, he got caught stealing somebody's catalytic converter. The owner shot them twice. The owner was not allowed to have a gun. He was on parole. So it's I think there's some meth involved here on both sides. And then he drags the guy down the road and leaves him in the woods for dead.
Did he drag him down the road with the car or just drug him down the road to
I think
try
he drug him down the road with the car. And then... Yeah, and so it's bad news all around here. I'm not saying this is funny. This is just the sad state of things are in. Fewer cops, higher crime, catalytic converter thefts are through the roof. I think, in my opinion, you shouldn't even be able to sell a catalytic converter without having your registration and proving that it was yours or something. And if you don't, tough shit. Like, it's gotten so bad now because those, like, no, nobody should be taking Incali conversion anymore without proof of ownership. Because, I mean, totaled cars are a good one for it, or junkers, like, there's still value in those because they have precious metals in there. But this whole thing has just gotten ridiculous with how often catalytic converter thefts happen. And they can happen within less than a minute. Comprehensive insurance is probably your best bet. Yeah. But at the same time, if you're in an area where that happens a lot, I mean, especially in Seattle or Lakewood, or there are hotspots for crime. Everybody knows it. This is going to happen. And I think this needs to be happening at the legislative level, where if you're caught buying a catalytic converter without those things on hand and proof, then you should be charged with theft. And I think, I think that's the only real solution, in my opinion. But this is pretty bad. Like, people are getting sick of it because there's not enough crime prevention in the area, and stuff like this is a sad outcome of that. So
just so we're clear to our listeners, Dan Putnam believes that if you're caught selling stolen property, you should be prosecuted. How dare you, Dan?
I know. Novel idea. I know. I'm glad I thought of it. Obviously, nobody else had, so I had to say it.
No, it's you know, and the fact that you had the gall to actually say it out loud. So
I know.
I applaud you for that, sir. Yeah. You know, it's, and as Dan said, it's not funny. You know, if especially when we've talked about this, everybody knows Dan and I are responsible gun people. Don't shoot somebody if you don't have to. If your life's not in danger, you don't have to.
Yeah,
you know,
this is absolutely converter. Not justified. So, this was straight up, it was a murder, and it's not. It's just sad that things are coming to this point, and I'm oddly starting. I oddly was not surprised. Let's put it that way. I saw this article, and I was like, that just sucks all around, and I'm not surprised, and that sucks. That's what sucks the most, is I'm just not surprised anymore. And it's fixable.
That's what surprises you, is you're not surprised? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What surprises me is I'm not surprised. It's like, why? Yeah. This is such a preventable thing, too, if the industry would just be like, we're not going to do this. You know, you got to be able to provide ownership. No, they just enable it.
It's like they should be able to know by all the, you know, the Sawzall marks on both ends. That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, you got to cut it out, but it's especially like if you got a junk vehicle and
I get that, but I'm saying, like,
if you junked an old '70s vehicle mid '80s vehicle that wasn't worth anything, it might be worth buying the catalytic converter off of it just to sell that, because they're worth a few $100. And if your car is a piece of junk already, take that and sell it for parts and just prove you did it. But anyway, yeah.
Well, I think that. That's a good wrap up of current affairs as far as in the automotive industry. A lot of really good stuff happening. So glad to hear about your new truck and everything going on. I can't wait to see it. I mean, I know, you know, it got a lot of attention on the Avance page, and so we can't wait to see it up here.
Yeah. Well, it's going to Moab here in a couple of weeks, and I'm doing White Rim Trail with it. So we're going to test its off-road chops, hit the locker because it's going to need it in some of those spots, and I'm actually going to use it, so as intended.
Okay. So. And I expect you to be towing the trailer while doing that.
Of course, with the Audi in it.
That'll make that. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, that's good luck with that. Oh, I was going to ask you, how does Shauna like the truck?
She doesn't like it as much as the Raptor, which is expected, but she likes that it enables us to do or to live more of the life we want. And that's really what it comes down to, is this is in service of creating that. And so she's on board with it that's with fair. That. She likes the massaging seat. The dog likes it. He can barely get in it.
I was worried about her. You're barely getting in it.
Yeah. No, the step comes down pretty far, so that's good. But
That's nice. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, I always like kind of hearing Shauna's opinion just because she has such an interesting insight into cars. So that's cool.
I'll make you laugh here. So her biggest complaint is there's a metal emblem on the back of the seat that says AT4X, and it grabs your hair if you're – she's not even that short, but I mean, if you're under 5'5 or 5'6 or if you have long hair, it's going to pull your hair. So now my mission is to find a way to cover that emblem without ruining the leather on the seat. So I don't care about the emblem. She's just like,
I wonder if you could just wrap it.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I'm going to try and get, so you can get, it's got like a Alcantara headliner, and I can get some stuff for that. I'm going to try and put that over it and see how that works. I don't know. I'm going to reach out to our friends at Leather Tech and see if they have any ideas on what I can safely cover that with, because then when in doubt, I'll ask an expert. So, and if worst case scenario, I'll just remove it. I'll have them remove it. So,
Fair enough. All right. Well, I mean, that kind of wraps up this week's shop talk. You know, Dan will be back, but mid next month, I should say.
Yep.
So we got a few great interviews coming up. If you haven't listened to some of last week's episode, it's amazing with Emmy. Definitely check that out. Check out all the episodes. You know, we always love to hear back from people when they listen to them and give us some input on what they want to hear. You know, if you've got ideas, obviously, you know, text us to write us through Facebook, or do we still have the phone? We still have our Google number, right?
Yep.
We can text. Yeah.
It's, what is it? 298-728-7573. Yeah.
I put Dan on the spot there. He didn't know I was coming. So
I was like, what is it? What is it? I don't call myself
What
a lot.
Is it? What is it?
Yeah.
I know. So give us a call, text, I should say. Text through that. So, yeah. So thank you for the update on everything, Dan, and glad you're well. So for this episode of the Avance Podcast, as always, I'm Nick.
I'm Dan, and don't just get there. Enjoy the drive.